Happy Tuesday, y'all. It's Del Shores.
And I'm Emerson Collins, and you're watching The Del and Emerson Show.
Straight talk.
Real gay.
Well.
Hold on. There's a technical difficulty.
Is something wrong? Or are we not live?
Now we are. It didn't, for some reason, yours didn't go. But here we are. Now
not
we are.
Yours. is that what we missed?
Surely. Well, also, I don't know. You can only get to this show right now via one of our pages. So that part is a little perfunctory. Hey, everybody. It's Tuesday. Hello and welcome.
Yes. Welcome.
How are you?
I don't know. I'm feeling a little weird today, a little off, you know, a little off kilter. I don't know why. I went into West Hollywood to pick up my mail. I got me a new lighting device that Rosemary Alexander gave me for Father's Day that I hope I'm clear today. And then I got some bird seed because, you know, I'm an old Southern woman who likes to feed birds.
Could have just stopped after old Southern woman.
Okay. I know. And I was going to say, and grow tomatoes, but I'm sure that y'all already know that. You know that there's a tomato plant somewhere around my house.
And how was your Father's Day?
How was my Father's Day? It was good. I went over for some social distant visiting meal with Rosemary and Newell Alexander. They're my former in-laws, and my daughter Rebecca was there. My ex-wife Kelly was there, and we had some chin, opened some presents. I got some really cool socks with my image on it.
Wait, you got socks with your face on it?
I have socks. I should have brought them in here.
From who?
What's that? From Rebecca. They're. I guess you just order them somewhere. They're kind of narcissistic, I guess, if you're wearing yourself on your feet. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, on the list of narcissistic things we have done as entertainers, I don't think that ranks very high.
No, I think it's pretty low. So anyway, that was my how was yours?
No, I'm not done. Which picture is it?
Well, you want to entertain and I will go get... No, I think it's
yes.
A okay, oh, I'll find it.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the show. If you are watching us on the Facebook, on YouTube, on Twitter, via Periscope, say hello. If you have questions or comments, type them in. We do not have a guest today. This is another We Are Enough show. I like these shows because I try to cram a lot of stories in, and, you know, he goes awry at times. And when we have time, I don't get stressed. And so we've got a wide range of stories continuing our Pride and Protest series, LGBTQ news and nonsense. So say hello, share the broadcast with your friends. Do you have the socks?
I have the socks, yes.
Oh, that's a very good choice. Oh, I thought maybe like one picture. This is like
It's all over the place.
But now it's on the bottom, so you're just walking all over yourself.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. So it smells good. I don't know about you. I can't wear anything that I haven't washed. So it was in the laundry. So
fair. Yeah. Well, obviously I'm not a father, but I have been called daddy now once or twice total, I think. So
does it bother you? Because I don't know.
No.
You know, it doesn't bother you. I don't like it like on Grindr or Scruff, they go, hey daddy.
I don't understand because no one has ever said a hey daddy and meant it as an insult.
I know. I honestly think, Emerson, I need to get over it. Like you've taught me to get over, hey, girl. But it's because I'm a dad and my kids call me daddy. So it just sounds weird.
Of course. Yeah. And I get that. But you also do have to know, you know, there's terms in the community, certainly, that might not always be meant as a compliment. But daddy has never been said as an insult. It is always just an uncomfortable sexualization at worst. So, but, yes.
When they say, hey, daddy, are you Jen? I just say, go get a job.
That's a different insult. Jim said, I don't really care for 30 plus calling me daddy. But that's because you're hearing like the insult, like that you're old enough to be their daddy. But y'all, lots of people say that.
It's like four or five years difference.
I'm just taking the compliment and running with it. A virile masculinity is implied.
Emerson, it is a big stretch for you to be a daddy. I'm so sorry. You look, you're like, you're still spring twink, I think.
Twink. I know. Well, that's what I mean. So if somebody says it to me, it's just the highest of compliments. So I'll take it.
All right. Okay. Well, there you go. So what do we got today? Oh, it's voting day in a few places.
Yes, there's so many primaries happening. There's the Kentucky primary where there's an opportunity to make Mitch McConnell go out to the pasture and be retired.
Yeah.
I don't know how likely it is. I haven't seen the exit polling yet, so I would imagine we'll start getting stuff shortly.
Well, what's Gordon's first name? There's Amy McGrath, and then the other candidate is African American, and he's wonderful. I saw him on AM Joy the other day, and he has just ignited in the past couple of weeks, and they're predicting a possible upset because she has been polling way ahead forever. But she sort of got in trouble because they asked her if she'd been to any protests. And she said, no, I've been doing things in my personal life. And then he grabbed that for an ad. And so anyway, he's been very articulate. He is smart and sharp and a good politician. So.
And where else? Oh, and there's a couple of big ones in New York, too. We'll talk about it in a minute. Yes, Billy Metcalf said Charles Booker. That's who you're talking about.
Yes. Oh, Charles Booker. Yes, yes, yes. I apologize. I said Gordon. I'm getting someone else mixed up somewhere. I was doing a lot of research this morning. And, you know, at this age, when you actually smoke pot, it sometimes the brain gets fuzzy. Or maybe it's just age. I don't know. Or a combination.
Well, and also, honestly, really, truly, now that we're all paying much more attention to elections that don't necessarily affect us directly, it becomes a lot of names. You know, it's a lot of people, yeah. A lot of places, and that's great. And being engaged, you know, we're all watching Kentucky, but I can't do anything about it personally. So that is exciting things. And of course, like, we can't not enjoy the catastrophe that was the Tulsa rally this weekend.
Oh my God. It was just, and you know what was weird is I couldn't find it. I had to watch Fox. I mean, I wanted to see, you know, what was spewing and dribbling out of his mouth. And so I couldn't find it on the channels I normally watch.
That's because he tells lies, and it's responsible news organizations will wait and show you the clips when they can give you the context.
It was like, It was crazy town. It was crazy time and town. So
I didn't watch a single clip. I don't care. All I care is that, you know, we all know that the way his fragile ego works, this was the most embarrassing thing that's happened to him in this presidency. Him standing there looking at empty seats was the most traumatizing thing for his poor, sad, fragile ego. He went to a red state that he's definitely going to win, thinking I can just have another big rally and it'll feel good about myself, and it didn't, and I love that.
And I love that the seats were blue. It was like there was a blue wave of empty seats in the arena. That was my favorite. Empty table.
Empty chairs, yeah. And empty tables. A nice little Les Mis reference. Ann Walker wants you to know you could see it on C-SPAN.
Thank you, Ann Walker, because I know Ann has banned. She would just not be proud of me for watching Fox. Also, Emerson, I want everybody to know that on June the 25th and at 5:30 p.m. Mountain Time, because it's an El Paso thing, I met an amazing woman a Congresswoman Veronica Escobar last year when I hosted a gay and lesbian center event in El Paso. And we hung out for a little bit. And I was just so honored that she asked me to be her celebrity guest on a Zoom fundraiser. And that's going to be on the 25th at 5:30 Mountain Time, 6:30 Central Time, which means 4:30 Pacific Time.
And where do they watch?
Zoom. It's on Zoom. It's a Zoom fundraiser, and I'll be sure to put it on my page, so on my Facebook page, so that everybody can find it.
All right. Well, if y'all have thoughts, questions,
I said for Texas Congress. She's running for Texas Congress, Veronica.
If you have questions, comments, Write them in. If they entertain us, we'll address them. And now we'll get on to the LGBTQ news and then to the nonsense.
Oh, yes. And I'm up first. So, all right. Well, so U.S. Ambassador to South Korea, Harry Harris, I love those kind of names, hung the pride flag over the embassy in May and hung a Black Lives Matter banner and tweeted June 13th that the embassy had hung the flag to show solidarity and support for the flag against racial injustice and police brutality as we strive to be a more inclusive and just society. But the State Department says it requested the banner be removed because Black Lives Matter is a nonprofit organization and the U.S. has a policy of not promoting or encouraging contributions to any specific groups or organizations. After being told to remove the banners, Harris tweeted, "From diversity, we gain strength. Unfortunately, the United States government doesn't seem to agree." Oh, I love him. He's a little bit of a shit stirrer. In a statement from the BLM banners removal, an embassy spokesman said this in no way lessens the principles and ideals expressed by raising the banner, and the embassy will look for other ways to convey fundamental American values in these times of difficulty at home. In June 2019, Trump's State Department forbade at least four requests for U.S. embassies around the world seeking to fly the rainbow flag during Pride Month, but embassies worldwide defied Trump and flew the Pride flags without permission this year anyway.
So yeah. I love that so much that you control this presidency by pushing equality. Like, you can put up a flag to support Black lives, you can put up a flag to support Pride, and for some people that supports both, and that is trolling this presidency just by protesting for equality. I love it. And then related to today's elections, you know, as we continue talking about protests and Black Lives Matter, New York has not one but two openly gay Black candidates running, and if either of them won, they would be the first gay Black representative in Congress. In New York's 17th district, Mondaire Jones is running. He's one of seven Democrats running in a very blue district. What that basically means is whoever wins this primary is all but guaranteed to win the election in November. He grew up in the district, son of a single mother who worked three jobs and still needed housing subsidies and food stamps. At 19, he chaired a committee on the NAACP's National Board of Directors at Stanford. When the police chief of nearby Palo Alto made comments endorsing racial profiling, he organized student protests, which led to the chief's resignation and department reforms. He worked at Justice in the Obama administration, and after Harvard Law, he did pro bono work investigating discrimination claims. So all these experiences have informed his policies. He supports universal health care through Medicare for All, a program to assure all Americans have housing, $15 minimum wage, tuition-free public college, cancellation of student debt, sweeping criminal justice reform, and a Green New Deal. So he's very progressive. When asked about his differences with Biden, our likely presidential candidate, he said, "I have tremendous respect for Vice President Biden, and I think he needs encouragement. I plan to be that encouragement. We also need to radically reimagine our criminal legal system." Then in the nearby 15th district, Richie Torres is actually an Afro-Latino man, and he's running against Ruben Diaz Sr. Now, this is where this story gets a little weird. Ruben Diaz Sr. is a Democrat, runs as a Democrat, but he is a Pentecostal minister with a long history of homophobia and transphobia, and is a member of the New York City Council. He voted against marriage equality, has said the city council is controlled by the homosexual community, considers abortion murder, and praises Donald Trump, but is a Democrat. Torres has said, "I've seen the impact of corporate welfare and government neglect. He went into politics early, worked on housing issues for city council, then won a seat on the council at age 25 in 2013, making him the city's youngest elected official and first member of the LGBT community elected in the Bronx. He's fought for affordable housing and criminal justice. His endorsers include several members of Congress, Christian Cooper, the gay Black man from the Central Park birdwatching incident, Thomas Duane, New York's first openly gay senator, labor unions, women's rights groups, LGBT groups, and more." So it's very exciting because representation matters. These would be the first openly gay Black men in Congress, and both of their votes are needed. Mondaire is leading in the polls. Torres is a little bit behind Diaz. So hopefully as it shakes out today, they both win.
Yes, I'm excited to start seeing those results. I love those results. Do you like get on CNN when they start coming in? Or
honestly, what? I'm at a point right now where I'm like ignoring Twitter, like the way people are behaving and things like, no, I will read articles with results. I can't keep 24-hour news in the background. It's not helping me.
Oh, okay. Well,
you asked.
There you go. Well, this next story is basically, I would title it, It's Never Too Late to Come Out. Kenneth Feltz is 90 years old, and he lives in Colorado, and he just came out to his family and friends. During the pandemic, he started writing his life story while isolated in his home. And that's when he started thinking about Philip, the man he fell in love with back in the 50s. Feltz ultimately left Philip in order to marry a woman and live his life in the closet. He had one daughter with his wife. They later divorced. Feltz said coming out in the 50s, 60s, and 70s was horrendous. Part of the reason I didn't ever consider coming out. I guess I didn't have the courage to face society at that time, so I just went ahead and buried it. A few weeks ago, he was talking to his daughter, who is a lesbian, and he told her about Philip. It was the first time, I love this scene, it was the first time he ever mentioned that he is gay. Feltz then came out to his whole family in emails. He explained that he felt like he had two personalities living in him, Ken, a straight man, and Larry, a gay man. I didn't understand where Larry, the name Larry, I wonder if that's his middle name. He said, I've been in the closet all my life, deep in the closet, opening that door at the front. I just had great trepidation as to what people would say. I was very concerned because I needed people and I couldn't stand the thought of losing them just because I decided to finally be who I really was. He updated his Facebook profile picture to one with him in a rainbow hoodie, and he participated in, oh, look at that. That's so cute. He participated in a 5K to raise money for Denver Pride, and he attends a virtual LGBTQ senior coffee club in his area. Feltz said that he had tried to track down Philip, but he hasn't been successful.
I love so much about it.
First of all, I love that he ran. Let's just start backwards. I love that he ran a 5K.
No, I'm like, sir, I wouldn't run a 5K today. And you're 90. Like, why? Yeah. Why?
And then I love that he's very internet savvy. He's on Zoom. He's on Facebook. He's sending out emails, and he's 90. It's a great. And I do love the scene with his daughter, and it kind of saddens me that she's been out probably for a long time and he wasn't able to share that with her.
Well, and you know, and I put it, you know, and it's such a reminder, you know, with all of our advancement and all of our progress, so many people still live in places, live in communities, or, you know, that coming out is still a challenge at so many ages for so many reasons. And I love that he found it and found that time. And also that he dove all the way in, like, give me that rainbow hoodie.
Yeah,
I want it.
You
and also that he's looking for Philip.
I know, that's the movie. That is the movie, Finding Philip.
It's a short film. You know why?
Stop. You.
Well, somebody. I mean, let's be honest. They're 90. It is the average life expectancy of a white man in America is like 76 or 77.
Excuse me. A movie is 90 minutes to 120 minutes. We could tell this beautiful story starting with that 5K run. And those.
I know, but he has to find him before you can make that movie.
Okay. Well, that's valid point, Emerson. But
otherwise, it's a short film. That's all I'm saying.
Who else thinks that Emerson's just a little bit evil? Just a little bit.
Well, I'm not saying I hope that. I'm just saying we have to be realistic at this point. I am not likely to see 90 personally. So I don't mean it as bad. I got out the old yearbooks, you know, searching through all the interwebs.
I would hesitate to green light the documentary. I will agree with you there.
You might be investing a lot of time in it, you know, and not getting your ending.
Yes. So
But seriously, congratulations.
It really is a beautiful story. So we're silly.
I was seeing if anybody. Oh, to see, and like, it's relatable. Tate said, I totally understand. I was 45 before I came out.
I understand too. I was 35. So what I really understand is making up for lost time, because, you know, he came out of that closet and he went for it.
Hold on. We all come out at different ways at different times. Robert Christian said, I came out at a Denny's restaurant saying I'm a cocksucker. Now, sometimes you just got to get to the point.
Why Denny's? It's Mormon owned. Just a shock of them.
It's what? Mormon owned?
Mormon owned. I'm almost sure. Somebody Google that, please. I do think that they were, during Prop 8, I remember Denny's was on the list.
Also, that 5K. Can we talk about 5Ks for a second? You know, how come we always have to do physical activities for a cure? You know, why are we always running for a cure, walking for a cure, riding a bike 550 miles for a cure? I've said it before and I'll say it again. I would like to binge watch television for a cure. Like, I'm going to watch TV for 96 straight hours. I will not get off my couch. I'll pee into a Gatorade bottle or something. And if you can sponsor an hour or two, you know, like $500, and you get to pick the next movie.
I have an idea. I have a really good idea, very twisted and dark. A smoke-a-thon for cancer research. And everybody decide they get to smoke just until they can't anymore. And that is their last cigarette. And I'm not talking about death. They're all quitting, but it's a smoke. I'm just saying, you could get a lot of people donate money and quit smoking.
Sure.
You don't like this idea.
Well, I just don't think that's practical. You're either going to send people to the hospital with nicotine poisoning, or they're going to light up again an hour after you end the smoke-a-thon.
And how are you going to make money by binge watching Netflix? I mean, how's that gonna?
I literally just described it. Did you not listen while I talked?
I'll have to run it back.
I said, oh, look, pay $500 and you get to pick the next movie.
Oh, okay.
Or pay $1,000 and I'll binge watch a season of something. You just sat there and looked at me while I talked and waited to say smoke-a-thon.
I was thinking it through. I was thinking. I also, well, never mind.
Tate said, I'm with you, Dale. Smoke-a-thon to quit. So there's some people.
There you go. We got a name for it now. Smoke-a-thon to quit.
Imagine the organization.
What's that?
And it's got to be for lung cancer.
Yes, for lung cancer, specifically for lung cancer. I think it's dark and it's twisted, and I think it's a really good idea.
This is better. Cold turkey for a cure.
Yes, Ed, that's the one. Ding, 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 you win.
All right. Well, in continuing on,
make fun of me, and I'm getting people around my board meeting table coming up with these ideas.
Uh-huh.
We're gonna run with it. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. In Corona news, because it's interesting as the news switches to elections, we've talked about all this is still happening. Shane Cullinan is a bartender who works in Wilton Manors, Florida, a place we know well.
Yes.
At the pub, a local gay bar. In a public Facebook post, he shared that earlier in June, local business owner Gary Bouvier wandered behind the bar without a face mask on, apparently looking for the bathroom. I'm going to go ahead and assume drunk. When Cullinan pointed out its location and told Bouvier he needed to wear a mask inside the bar, Bouvier allegedly told him, "You don't know who I am and fuck off." Cullinan then followed Bouvier to near the bathroom and informed him of the mask policy once again, adding that the bar requires it as a way to protect others from coronavirus. Bouvier allegedly replied, "You don't know who I am and fuck your mom."
Oh.
Now we're escalating. Cullinan said that 7 minutes later, Bouvier came back inside, this time wearing a mask, but pulled it down and spit in his face. He claims Bouvier then said, "Fuck off, you masked with the wrong person," and quickly escaped in his Lamborghini, as Cullinan called the police. Cullinan says he has a friend who recently died of COVID-19 and called the incident the most disrespectful, disgusting thing he's ever experienced in 25 years of bartending. I was completely shocked, and so was Bouvier's wife.
Whoa.
I know, I have questions. He was in the gay bar having a drink, but his wife, I don't know. In a non-public Facebook post, Bouvier reportedly wrote, "I consumed too much alcohol and engaged in out-of-character behavior for which I profoundly regret. I hope that I may demonstrate that one moment of poor judgment does not define who I am. I deeply apologize to Shane."
Well, you know what he ought to do? He ought to do this. He ought to apologize with Shane to Shane with the biggest tip the man has ever had. And I'm talking thousands and thousands of dollars, because that is so disgusting. I've performed at the pub. It's a great place. I love that place.
I know, as we are getting into this time where it's, you know, the states are letting local ordinances or local businesses make their own decisions, demanding and forcing people to respect whatever the business decides is becoming a weird, you know, bartender, business owner, or fellow customer accountability. You know, it's putting the responsibility in all of our hands as communities to hold people that don't want to play by the very sensible rules accountable.
That is so disgusting. Somebody find him on Facebook and send him this show, and tell him that find him and give me the Facebook. I'll send him a message. He needs to pay Shane. He needs to pay Shane some money with his.
Ben said he owns Wilton Wings right down the street from the pub. So.
Oh, he owns Wilton Wings. Oh, you don't know who I am. I own another club. I don't have to pay back.
And he, driving that Lamborghini, he can clearly afford to make some financial amends.
Yes, he sure can. So, all right, our favorite minister is back in the news, Franklin Graham. He's back on his bullshit. Thank you, Emerson, for writing that for me. This time, he's going after Anthony Fauci. You just don't do that. Don't do that. I love him. After he was asked why so many people had taken issue with the coronavirus precautions during a podcast, Fauci said, "One of the problems we face in the United States is that unfortunately there is a combination of an anti-science bias that people are for reasons that sometimes are, you know, inconceivable and not understandable, and they just don't believe science and they don't believe authority. So when they see someone in the White House which has an air of authority to it, who's talking about science, that there are some people who just don't believe that. And that's unfortunate because, you know, science is truth." Anthony, you worded that in such a way, it was very difficult to read that quote, but that's the way people talk. Graham was not happy with this. No. He said this week, Dr. Anthony Fauci made the statement that science is truth. Really? I would beg to differ. Science may be a quest for truth, but it is certainly fallible. I'm not against science, of course, but we know that scientists often disagree. As an example, the early Imperial College London coronavirus model has since been proven wrong. And disputes continue today between the experts about the model used more recently in the U.S., and man did not evolve from apes or tadpoles, as many scientists say. That's just not true. God created man and woman, as the Bible says. If America has an anti-science bias, as the doctor said in his interview, it might be because we aren't sure whether to trust those who are presenting their science to us. Dr. Fauci first told the American people they didn't need to wear face masks, then reversed himself to say that we did. Then he revealed the reason that he said that initially was because there was a shortage of face masks. So the facts changed to avoid a run on face masks. That's not a good step towards building trust. Science isn't truth. God is.
God. Everybody loves your Franklin Graham. It's the only reason I put it in, because otherwise he'd be on the list of people where I'm like, who cares? But it makes me crazy. It's a thing I heard growing up sometimes too. You know, it's like, if the point is God gave those scientists the brains to figure this crap out. Like, isn't that also from God? Like, I've never understood the counter to scientific advancement and understanding. as though the point of that brain you got wasn't to figure stuff out.
Yeah, and let's just break this down a little further. He says, okay, so all that's in the Bible is true, so we're supposed to believe, just start naming things. Just start naming things. Let's just start with the rapture. Let's just start with, you know, the ascension. And that I don't know why I was just reminded of this story. Years ago, my daughter Caroline had this incident with one of her schoolmates when she was going to Notre Dame. The girl got in trouble because she went over to Borders bookstore in Studio City, and she moved all the Bibles into the fiction section. And I just applauded her. I sent her a little message. I said, good for you for you know, being a little bit of a shit stirrer. And I said something on Facebook about it. Someone that worked at Borders got mad at me because it caused him extra work. Anyway.
All right. But on the science, what?
I said, it's the truth thing that gets me. That science is not truth, that God is true, the Bible is true. It just really bothers me.
Yeah, because it's like nothing else matters past, it's like that it stopped then, you know? Oh, don't keep thinking. Like if we weren't supposed to like sit around and think and figure out new things, we'd all be wandering nude around that garden trying not to eat from that one tree. Like the point is, you know, we can, that's that free will thing. Bless right. their hearts. Like, don't vaccines. It's like the ones who don't believe in electricity. I'm like, so advancement just stopped in like the 1800s, you know, like, but everything up to that was fine.
It's like, you know, you're getting a million reservations for that arena where 6,200 people showed up and they forgot to factor in the scientific possibility that TikTok kids would fuck them up.
Yeah. Rick said he worked at a Crown Books and did the same thing.
Good for you, Rick.
All of y'all messing around. All right, well, a quick intermission. We love doing this show. We're grateful you all always tune into the show. If you're watching the playback later, hello. We're grateful for you too. And we know times are tight and times are rough, but if you're somebody sitting on a pile of money and you want to throw us a couple of dollars for the effort we put into entertaining you and informing you, you can send us to Venmo, to me, at Emerson Collins. Or you can send us something on PayPal, beardcollinshoresproductions@gmail.com. Yes, you have to type out the whole thing. I don't know why I made that email address so long back when it happened.
BSP@gmail, BS or something like
that. Don't say some wrong email address. Somebody will try to write to it.
beardcollinshoresproduction@gmail.com. How's that?
And if you have questions, comments, topic, I am keeping an eye on the view. Let us know. And in the meantime, and exciting, you know, we don't want to keep all of the news negative. A really fun thing happened last night in the world of trans accomplishment. Mitch Harrison became one of the first openly trans men to compete in a network television competition series with his episode of the Titan Games, hosted by Dwayne Johnson, The Rock himself.
Yeah.
The series, I watched the trailer, the series channels like American Gladiators, and amateur athletes and fitness buffs compete in the most bonkers physical challenges to sit atop Mount Olympus in the winner's circle. Mitch first rose to fame playing basketball for Stanford and later for the University of Utah. His impressive record could have led to a professional career, but instead he opted to move to Alaska and pursue a low-profile life, in part because he came out as trans. Following his transition, Harrison married his wife Krista, and the two have a very quiet life together, probably doing their best to forget that Sarah Palin ever existed. I looked up the results. Hold on, I want to show you Mitch on the show. He lost both of his first two rounds, but he nearly brought The Rock to tears, talking about how proud he wanted to make him of it. And a very exciting accomplishment. So there, look at him on the Titan Games.
Look at that.
It's like those like crazy recreations of olden timey bonkers things where you got to have every muscle and strength and developed. All those things I don't have and cannot relate to.
Me neither. And that ship has sailed and docked for me. There's just no hope. There's just no hope. But my whole goal is just to stay thin That's it. Just to stay presentable.
Ewan McDade said, could I get a shout out for my friend Killian Riley? It's his birthday. Yes, you sure can. But also, you know, if you want to get Del Shores to do a shout out for you, you can book him on Cameo and he'll send a personalized video to your friend.
And also Emerson Collins does Cameo as well. My Cameo is $32. I wanted to do $32.09, but they wouldn't let me. So it's just $32. So
mine's cheaper. I'm like $28 or $29.
I'm cheap. And you're cheaper.
Yes. We are not expensive. Although we do, anyway, not important. Yes, you can book us both on Cameo if you want specific direct messages to your friends. We'll do anything.
To your friend. What was his name? Cillian?
Cillian.
Okay. Happy birthday, sir. Oh, is it me?
It sure is, because see, the way it works is I do one and then you do one.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, so we're back and forth. Well, Peter, Nina Schiff, is that the way you say it? Nina Schiff owns the Fitness 2 Life gym in British Columbia. Someone posted his business card on Facebook. Besides listing the gym's facilities, it features, this makes me just laugh, a Jesus-like muscle man carrying a hefty looking crucifix. And on the back of the card, it also features a man and a woman and the words straight pride. He's not on Facebook, so he hasn't seen the comments, but he says he received several phone calls, some criticizing and others supporting him. He says, it was not to offend anyone. It was just my freedom of expression. Everybody is welcome in my gym. It's just my personal view. We don't have a right to judge anyone. I'm not judging anybody with what I put on the card. I guess maybe I shouldn't have put it there. I know I have gay members coming here. I'm not against anybody, any color, race, nationality, nothing. Everybody is welcome in the gym. I am proud that I am a straight guy. I take no offense if someone is proud that they are gay. Everybody has their right to choose their lifestyle they want to live or whatever it may be. And I don't get offended if someone has gay pride on their window or car, wherever it may be. The business cards have now been pulled. And Nina Schiff says his cards in the future will make it clear that everyone is welcome in his gym. So I want to wait.
Look at that card. You know, he desperately wanted to call it CrossFit with that Jesus on there, but that was already taken.
I'm not seeing. Where's the Jesus? Is that the Jesus? Oh, that's the Jesus. It's hard for me to see it. So Jesus is surrounded by strength, gym, life, flexibility. There's no prayer there, though. He needs prayer around Jesus.
Well, that's not a sports thing.
Well, no, but it's part of that, you know, it's part of the Christianity. And anyway, it's an odd card. It's not even well designed.
Well, the problem is it's very all lives matter, right? It's like, I have straight pride. You don't need straight pride because nobody has a problem with straight people being straight. It's like people that are like, why isn't there white entertainment television? Well, because predominantly the culture is white entertainment television. Like, minorities celebrating themselves is in opposition to a history of being discriminated against or marginalized. You know, straight pride is you can hold her hand and not think about it.
It's
a little dumb.
Women in film used to get a little clap back from guys that go, we don't have men in film. Well, yeah, you have a lot of men in film. A lot of men.
Is it a white Jesus? It is. It always is.
It's a very white Jesus.
It's always a white Jesus. Anybody using Jesus like that is using a white Jesus. Let's be honest.
Well, all right.
Well, cranking on, and like I hesitate to do this, but we want to make some points about it. Chadwick Moore is a name you may not know, should not know, but the point of the story goes somewhere. He's a gay Republican. And some backstory to the current incident. A couple of years ago, he wrote a profile of Milo Yiannopoulos. Now, you may not know who he is, but he was a big conservative troll, basically, a professional troll who eventually got himself banned from most social media platforms for crossing the line from trolling into genuinely bigoted and terrible. But so Chad wrote a profile of Milo for Out Magazine, and many in LGBTQ media took issue with it, so much so that a bunch of LGBTQ writers and media editors all signed a big thing saying that writing a profile of a person like that and giving them sort of a glowing profile photo shoot to accompany with it is not the way we should be talking about that kind of person in our community. And then he also once claimed he was kicked out of a Brooklyn gay bar for his politics. He's very representative of that very specific gay conservative who says, it's harder to come out as conservative than gay. And he often makes appearances on Fox News. So that's the setup. Over the weekend, he tweeted a very obvious troll comment saying, I'm sorry, Blacks, but you already have a month. Juneteenth isn't a thing. Don't colonize our month as well. Thanks, signed the gays. Well, naturally, because we can't keep ourselves from engaging with terrible trolls, he was dragged and he trended. And he was when he was challenged repeatedly that, by the way, Juneteenth happened 100 years before Stonewall, he said, actually, it only became a holiday in 1980 via Republican Texas governor. Today, it's only a holiday in three states. June 19th, 1865 was almost completely ignored across the South because Blacks had already been celebrating for weeks. Thanks, ahistorical. And followed that up with saying, if Black Lives Matter can have their mass gatherings, riots, and protests, why can't we have our pride parade? In case you're wondering if he's just a dumb conservative, he's clearly trolling because last year he wrote to upset liberal queer people about Pride Parade saying, you watch naked leathery old men with nipple rings waddle down the street, testicles knocking at their knees, or third-rate drag monsters exposing their buttholes to crowds of children. And he wrote that gay people should acknowledge the benefits of healthy, productive shame. Now, I hesitated to even include this because he's definitely trolling. The point is attention, and when he trends, then he can go on Tucker Carlson, where he appears regularly, and do a segment about how he's a persecuted white gay. But I think it's important to talk about because the kind of trolling he does ignores that Black queer people exist and represents that issues that many Black queer people and queer people of color have with white gays in our community. And it's a reminder of why we have to show up for issues that don't directly affect us. Now, you had some engagement.
And here's the thing is, I mean, Emerson, I wish I'd called you when I actually texted Matt Hayes when I saw this tweet, this horrible tweet that people were posting or saying, not, hey, don't say the gays. I'm not part of that group with you. So I had asked Matt, did he know who he was? He did not. I should have asked you because you did, and I would not have engaged. So I went on his Twitter page, and I decided that I was going to do the Chelsea Clinton approach. And I tweeted him, I truly hope that you find happiness. That's what I wrote him. And then, I hashtag Black Lives Matter, Juneteenth, and Pride 2020. Well, he retweeted me with a comment that said, honest question. Now, if you go to my Twitter, you'll see that I have a little cartoon that my good friend Trevor Wayne made of me, and I love it. He said, honest question, if you have a cartoon avatar, does that mean you are just hideously disfigured, repulsively beyond repair, grotesque, or perhaps just flaccid and mildly self-loathing? Not coping well with the aging process, a wimp, a douche, a small dicked wonder? I'm not sure. And then, you know, so what I did is, and then moments later, he then put a picture of me that he found on a red carpet, and he balded me even more than I am and made me very red. Just an awful, like he took the time to Photoshop. I don't know, he has some kind of program or something. And then I thought, you know what? I'm not going to give it to you. I'm not going to engage. So I deleted all of my tweets so that he would just look like an idiot.
Well, and it's, you know, it's an interesting dilemma because he does end up with a platform, right? I mean, it's very akin to what Candace Owens does. He becomes like the conservative homosexual that bigots can hold up and see, but I agree with that gay, so I'm not a bigot. And then because his name trended, I guarantee this week he'll be on Tucker Carlson one night talking about this and talking about how Juneteenth is taking away from the queer community and drawing focus away from it. And no one will be there to say, what about Black queer people, who is really what we can talk about this month? And so I do think it's worth challenging those people sometimes seriously, but not indulging in the trolling that gives them the opportunity to troll back. Because he just wants to upset you. He considers that the win. And his name on the trending topics is the win for him because he doesn't actually care.
And then he reports on the trending. On his Facebook page, he goes, come for me, mobs, come for me. Look where I am now. I just got, 300 new followers. I mean, that's his operation. That's how he does it. And if you go and look at his Twitter page, I mean, I'm shocked that he hasn't gotten kicked off Twitter. I reported about 11 before I decided just to stop.
I do think he's the kind of person worth shouting down with real facts and real dismissive. Because some instigate with an 8-pack who has millions of followers and discovered something new about racism, will tell them why, you need to keep educating yourself and sort of ignore this. I do think these people are worth shouting down, but you can't take it seriously and you can't engage with it in the mud because that's the win for him.
And I don't want him on the show. I don't want to give him any, never invite him to be, I wouldn't even want to debate with him in public. He's just not worthy.
It's not a real debate. It's not the same as someone who holds serious conservative beliefs that they want to engage and challenge you with. It's somebody whose goal is to upset you, and that is the win for them every time.
And he goes to physical appearance many times. He's an attractive guy of sorts. The one thing that I'm interested in, how does this happen? A bunch of people, I guess, have decided that all they comment on his page is Chadwick's your name. Your mother hated you so much to name you Chad. I mean, it's just on and on and on.
One of the first people that responded made a comment about it and then said, oh, it'd be a shame if we all just laughed at his name being Chadwick.
Okay. All right.
But it's then it becomes this cycle of everyone's trolling and everybody wasted their afternoon. Doing something that didn't do anything.
Well, we're inside. There's isolation involved. Okay.
I know. Some people need to take a carefully social distance walk around the block sometimes.
Or plant some tomatoes. Just plant some tomatoes. This is an 18-year-old writes on Reddit that he came out to his mom about 2 years ago and that she has talked to him about his sexuality a few times. And that was pretty much the end of it for him. But he says, I'm not really fine talking about it with her. I'm fairly comfortable with my sexuality, but it made me anxious with her for whatever reasons, and I avoid bringing it up. So about a month ago, his mom started pressuring him to come out to his dad. And he explains, my dad's pretty openly homophobic. He takes comments all the time, and I've heard him on the phone with some of his bigoted friends. And I know he's a big softie, but he still scares me sometimes. His mom believes that the dad will love his son no matter what, and adds, I do believe that I'm just not comfortable coming out to him while I'm living with him. I don't think he'd do anything crazy, but I'm not super about it. And then the mom went on to say, well, you'll be at university next year, and we want to be a part of your life. If you get into a relationship, are you just going to cut us off from that part of your life? And it's been making me feel a lot of guilt. If I don't come out, this is what he said, if I don't come out and be open about who I'm dating, then it's because I'm disrespecting them or something. So he asked advice. He wants to know, has it been long enough that I should just rip the Band-Aid off and tell him? I'm not sure if I'm worrying about nothing, if my feelings are justified. Would it really be disrespectful to not let him in on who I really am, even if it doesn't change much from the me he already knows? I don't think that's how he'll feel. I feel like he's gonna feel a lot of shame for the family and that my life is a sham. So I guess Queerty, where the story appeared, is asking for comments on what advice would you give him? So.
No, that was me asking you.
Oh, it's all. Oh, no, no, no. I went to the Queerty thing, it asked them their readers to comment on what advice. So, what would you tell him, Emerson?
Well, what would you all at home say? That was the point.
I see.
Honestly, I get this question. I get this kind of question a lot in my Instagram DMs and Facebook messages from younger queer people concerned about coming out. And in this case, I would say if you're out to your mom and you feel good about that and you are concerned about the reaction, you know, it is okay to wait. I think there is a lot, you know, in the closet looking out, there can be a pressure to come out. And what I tell kids first is talk to an LGBT center. I'm not a professional therapist and you don't know me. Don't take my advice because I'm a stranger. But also, secondly, it's okay to wait. If you feel any kind of discomfort about the potential reaction, usually I talk about first for your safety. That doesn't sound like an issue here. But if he's uncomfortable with what the reaction might be, it's okay to go ahead and go to college and then do that at some point there where you can come home, have the conversation, and know that you can leave while you continue to process through it together. I think it's that's a really safe way to manage your own feelings about it and know you have somewhere to be that's not in the environment if there's potential for his reaction to make you uncomfortable.
You know what I think? I think the mom has already had the conversation with the dad. And he said, but don't tell him I know. It just feels like to me that she feels that her son is safe.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, I think that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I haven't been in a relationship in a while, but I feel like that this is a conversation I probably would have had with my spouse.
I think that she's being selfish a little bit because it sounds like she's worried about losing him based on that last part of what she said. That she's worried he'll go off to college, get in a relationship, and because his dad doesn't know, he won't tell them anything about what's happening with him.
Well, I wish we could find out how this plays out.
Xana said that. Yes, Ken, perhaps mom already spilled the tea. Tate said, I would wait a little while. When you go to college, it might be best. Ed said, it sounds like he wants to tell his father at some point anyway. I think he should tell his father if he wants to share his authentic life, but only do it when he's 100% comfortable. His mom may have already shared it. I go back to, if you're not ready or you're concerned, wait until you feel good. It is nobody's timetable but yours.
I do want to say something about what you said, Emerson, about you know, talking to a therapist rather than just random people to get their opinion. Sometimes I feel like that somebody that can, because that was a very, very instrumental thing for me. When I came out, I had a therapist, Dr. Sandra Baca, and she really helped me and guided me. And the same thing that happens to you, I get a lot of people who write me who are in a relationship with a woman, and they want me to tell them to leave the woman and their kids. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to tell you what to do with your life. That is not my decision. That is not my decision. I can tell you what I did, but I can't tell you what to do. I am not a therapist.
Well, and I always see it too, because let's be honest, most people are bad at giving advice because most people tell you what they would do. Right. Well, that's not useful. Like what I would do in your circumstances is not actually useful to you. I ask people like, what do you want out of this? And let's talk about the things that could get you there because they may not be what I would do because I would want something different. You know, someone saying, well, I would, I mean, okay, great. That's interesting. But it can often be bad advice. So I try not to give particularly people in vulnerable situations like this actual direction because I don't know your life.
There you go.
All right. And in a very serious story, I think it's important to continue to share these stories and name these women, but they're very hard to read and hear. Last month, Jane Thompson was shot and killed by a Colorado State Patrol trooper. But it took until this week before it was known she was a trans woman because the Colorado State Police and local media misgendered her and said a man had been shot. She was killed the same week as the two black trans women, Dominique Remy Falls and Maria Melton, that we've talked about. According to the Mesa County Sheriff's Office, she was reported lying motionless near a grocery store and unresponsive when passersby offered assistance. When Trooper Jason Wade arrived on the scene, the report says Thompson began to act aggressively and brandished an approximately 10-inch knife. Now, the trooper was not injured. Tori Cooper, who's the director of community engagement for HRC's Trans Justice Initiative, said, it is clear that Jane was in crisis when she was approached by Colorado State Patrol. When members of the community need help, the expectation is to protect and serve, not to be killed. The sheriff's office says the incident is being investigated, but District Attorney Dan Rubenstein has announced no charges would be filed despite the ongoing investigation. It should also be noted, Colorado State Patrol troopers are armed with non-lethal tasers, but it does not appear that Wade attempted to use his before killing Thompson. And I feel like that's really relevant to our current Black Lives Matter conversation and the objections people have. You know, disobeying an officer's order, running from an officer, being belligerent should not involve a death sentence. Officers should be equipped with non-lethal devices. Certainly they need to protect their own physical safety, but there are lots of things you can do that are not exactly the right thing to do that should not also result in being murdered in response to it. You know, letting someone run away and then continuing to attempt to capture them rather than shooting them in the back like we saw in Atlanta. Right. I think it's important that we continue to talk about, like, he had a taser and it doesn't seem like it went off. That shows that an opportunity was skipped in the escalation, whether it's in the training or whatever, in our ongoing conversation about police reform.
Yes. And then we have Joel Schumacher, who was a wonderful director, openly gay. He directed St. Elmo's Fire, The Lost Boys, two of the Batman films. And he also directed A Time to Kill. He died of cancer at 80 in New York City. He's best known for directing. He was also a writer who began in Hollywood as a costume designer in the 70s. I did not know that.
I didn't know that either.
But it was, I love that. And then also just a little trivia with our friends. He cast Beth Grant in A Time to Kill, and that was Matthew McConaughey's very first that broke him. And there was this woman working in the casting department who was reading, who he told was a good actor. She got brave enough to ask him for an audition, and she wanted to play this woman in a mob. And he said, "You're a little too gentle for that. Why don't you play Sandra Bullock's nurse?" And that woman was Octavia Spencer. And that was her first break, and gave her the courage to move to Hollywood, and look what happened. So he gave a lot of people their starts. He his directorial debut was Lily Tomlin's The Incredible Shrinking Woman, and in Flatliners, which also had Beth Grant in it, and Dying Young, and both of those had Julia Roberts. So that, they had just a huge amount of credits, and he had a big controversy when he had green lighting nipples on George Clooney's Batman costume.
I remember that was so important. Lord, I remember the big scandal around those Clooney nipples on that Batman. I don't remember anything that happened in the movie, but I remember that.
So and he credits Dominique Dunn and Joan Didion, with whom he worked with on Play It As It Lays, based on her novel, for helping him get on his feet in Los Angeles. So RIP Joel Schumacher, you made a big difference in our
long and fulfilling and well-played career. All right, y'all, well, any final comments? That's sort of our show. Once again, I will say a huge thank you to Jonathan Pinkerton, Erica Kopage, Allison Busby, Victor Roberts, and Michael Conklin from last week for sending us tips. We really do appreciate that. We are entertainers with no entertaining work for the foreseeable future, realistically, likely this year. So the tips you send really are meaningful in us taking the time out to do this show, to share with you all and spend time with you all. So Venmo at Emerson Collins or PayPal, beardcollinsshoresproductions@gmail.com.
And in that, we do love doing this. And if you are like us and you are jobless and you don't have a lot of resources, please continue to join us and enjoy our show, because we are enjoying doing it for you and with you.
Yes, you can share the broadcast after it's done. You can subscribe on my YouTube channel. Those of you that are here every week, we appreciate you. And I get some emails of people who can't watch live and always watch later. So hey to y'all too.
Yes, all right. Well, Emerson, it's been a pleasure once again seeing you. It just been so long since I saw you, and I, you're back in LA, right?
We may go back and forth to Palm Springs a little bit, but I needed to be in my own little apartment to honestly to figure out what the rest of this year and life and things look like. So
you're doing it.
We'll still be here, and we'll see y'all on Friday.
Yes, we will.